Hamato Yoshi rises again, but only for a short time. But don't worry, we'll keep you company for a while on this episode of Deuteronomy, a Ninja Turtles retread. This week we're discussing Season 2, Episode 8, Splinter No More. I'm Dan.
And I'm Brian.
Let's go!
Originally broadcast November 19th, 1988, tracking this one as written by Michael Reeves, and we're going to come back to that later on. Dan, I went in with pretty low expectations on this one, felt like we were just coming off a couple of real peaks, and, one real peak, and wasn't really sure what to expect out of this one. Now, I knew it was going to be the tentpole of the demutation of Hamato Yoshi. But I don't recall this episode in my original memory banks. But all in all, I thought it came together really nice, and I'm looking forward to talking about this one with you.
Yeah, I enjoyed this episode. I am definitely going to be keeping an eye out for future episodes that are written by Michael Reeves and Bryn Stevens, because this one and our last episode were both written by this duo, and they're really solid episodes.
They have their faults, and we'll talk about those plenty.
Yeah.
The ability to cram content like this into 22 minutes, these one worked really well.
For sure.
So, enter the dingiest area of New York City sewer. A murky figure making the way down towards the lair of our heroes. In anticipation of the arrival, they are tensely prepping for what must be a terrific showdown with the shadowy antagonist. No, just kidding. It's just Michelangelo in a trench coat carrying pizza.
It is so funny how they tried to be, like, kind of mysterious on this walking shot, and... like, he still has his orange pads on.
Yeah, they do not cover it very well. But points for effort to try to build some suspense.
Yeah, well, it's like it's so funny because it is built to have this suspenseful feel. And it's clearly Mikey with pizza. So I love how, like, it's almost like a window into the turtle's mind of, like, this is how seriously they take dinner.
Yeah. I mean, I would, too.
I love how Leo's just casually hanging out with his swords, too.
Oh, yeah, he's, like, cleaning them or something, right? That's good student activity. I do want to say, though, big downgrade on Mikey's dress-up game. Like, we've had a few episodes of really exorbitant and flamboyant costumes, and to roll back to the default trench coat was just kind of disappointing.
Yeah, well, especially what happens later in the episode, I was expecting a very elaborate dress-up that we did not get.
I thought it was very sweet that Mikey got Splinter sushi. Have we ever, like, formally acknowledged that Splinter does not like pizza? It's always been kind of assumed, and there's jokes about it in, like, the 1990 movie and the Michael Bay movies. And we know that Splinter prefers sushi, as it's the food of his culture, and he's brought it with him. It's his favorite, but this is the first one where they outright said, like, you just don't like pizza, do you?
I think so, yeah. There was definitely episodes earlier in this series where they talk about him eating sushi or maybe even preferring it, but they don't really say, like, oh, he won't eat pizza. There's a fun little joke at the end of this episode about that, too.
Yeah, I was going to kind of brush over this detail, except it does kind of come full circle. Good writing, Michael.
Here we go.
I think the one real criticism I have for this episode, and this is going to lay the foundation for our conversation, is just that the animation is a little iffy. It's not bad, but it's kind of janky. It's a little jittery. It's a little rushed. Would you agree?
Yeah, the turtles look a little puffy, I thought.
Yes, the words in front of me, chunky Mikey.
It's like their skin is one of those puffy winter coats.
Oh, they're putting on their winter weight so that they can hibernate in the sewers. That's not how reptiles work. So the premise of this one is Splinter is depressed, and the turtles are sure that it's because he misses being human. Go figure. He's actually suffering from Carpathian kitten loss, though. That's a setup for a through line that I noticed in this episode. If anyone else can pick up on it, I want to hear about it. Either tweet at us or hit us up on our Discord. If you can catch the repeating references, and I'll raise a little flag, but I'm not going to tell you what they're from. There's a through line in this episode that I was picking up on, and I do not think it was an accident.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a conversation on, like, oh, I wonder what's wrong with him. Like, it's pretty cool to see the turtles being so, like, empathic, you know? Like, it would be easy for, like, party animal teens. Like, I think Donnie even refers to himself like party animals later
on
in the episode.
He does.
But it'd be easy for them to, like, not recognize that their father is going through some kind of depression. And yet, no, they pick up on it really easily, and they're concerned for him, and they want to help out. And, you know, Leo is the I guess he's posed as like the thoughtful one who's like, no, I'm pretty sure it's this. And then they're like, oh, yeah, that's a good point. He used to be human.
No, straight up, there's really great character development in this episode. And it's a lot more than you expect out of, you know, kids' TV. There's some serious emotions, some serious feels. I even got a little misty in the beginning here when they kind of discuss with Master Splinter about how they want to help him and how they know it must be hard. Like, it's just really good, solid writing that focuses on the family element that I feel doesn't get the forefront in the 87 series nearly as much as some of the other iterations.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like this is the one episode, or at least the first one in a while, where they actually concentrate on, like, not just Splinter's transformation and how he must feel, but also, like, there's a part in this same scene where Mikey is just straight up crying.
I mean, several of them cry, Splinter included.
Yeah, they're, like... I'm getting a little bit ahead of the curve here, but like when Splinter's talking about like not being able to go topside, Mikey's like, yeah, we know how that feels. Just like, yeah, you know, they all do. This is a really isolating experience that the five of them are going through.
I mean, they all do, except for the fact that they're up on the street every goddamn day parading in front of the completely disinterested New York audience.
Yeah, yeah.
Splinter is waxing poetic about feeling the sun on his face, and I seem to recall somebody going for a joyride in the party wagon last week.
Yeah, we'll definitely have some comments on this through line in this episode.
Either way, it is actually payoff for the contingent factor of this show. Like we've talked about, this isn't about the turtles getting revenge for their master's master against the Shredder. It's about helping their master get back to normal so we actually stay focused.
Yeah.
Donnie goes and pulls a crusty old thing out of a drawer. He says, guess what this is? I love Raph's line here. He says,
well, it's either a very old pizza or it's what's left of the Wicked Witch of the West.
Peak Raph.
It is leftovers.
I mean, it is a bit of a convenience, a little bit contrived that they're able to just scrape some of the leftovers. And oh, by the way, we just remembered we had it.
Right. Yeah. Donnie just had this and didn't tell anyone in his family for the last, 13 years.
Well, yeah, I think they're 15 or whatever it is, so give or take. But yeah, he's just kept the compound that completely changed their lives and might be the greatest scientific bit of progress that the world has seen in decades. And yeah, he's just keeping it in a drawer, and it's gotten dry and crusty. So we got the remnants of the OG mutagen, and Donnie thinks he might be able to reactivate it using some chemicals. And this is actually a little bit of, they don't obviously get into the science, but instead of just, like, putting it in the microwave or something, he's like, yeah, I gotta kind of work on this. Like, that's a bit of realism to it.
And a bit of character development, the whole, like, oh, yeah, he's the smart one, the scientific one. Like, he's actually doing science for once.
Yeah, so, I mean, fire up all the Bunsen burners and graduated cylinders, and let's unratify our pops.
Let's go for it!
I do like that they also ask Splinter, like, is this the thing you even want?
Yeah, and they actually cover both sides of the coin on that, because I really like that Splinter is emphatic in the sense that my rat features are helpful to us. We haven't only been able to succeed in our mission so far sometimes because of things like my scent and my night vision.
Yeah, which I didn't know he had night vision.
I mean, rats kind of do.
It makes sense. It's just one of those things where, like, I don't know if they called that out before. It's like, oh, cool.
Yeah, he hasn't demonstrated it at all.
Yeah.
But it's not inaccurate. That's all I'm saying. And, of course, they even address that Raph's scared about them getting splashed by the stuff. He could send them back to the pet shop, as he says. And, like, the demutification is a plot element in this series, the 87 series, the Archie series.
Yep.
And then later on, we get worried about remutification in 2012 and the Michael Bay Out of the Shadows. Where they're concerned about further mutating.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that further mutation thing has been a thing on Eastman and Laird's minds for a long period of time. It's fun to see when it pops up in different iterations.
We'll have plenty more time to cover it, but yeah, there was supposed to be another through line in the 87 series where later on we see it kind of watered down, where they mutate again into kind of creature monsters, but that was derived from an abandoned plot for a fourth movie where they're all going to get special mutation skills, not just become like Hulks or whatever the hell they are in the Red Sky series. So
yeah,
that is a continuous thing, but the demutification thing is the important tentpole here. And I did want to give props to Donnie for masking up way ahead of his time.
Yeah, I wanted to point out how nobody else did.
He's the only one administering it, so I guess...
He's a foot away from everybody, and it's an aerosol spray.
Well, he's half a foot away from Splinter, so I build it in. But hey, it works. Splinter's back to normal. Looks like Hamadayoshi. That took, like, all of an entire afternoon, I guess.
Yep, so, could have done it at any time, Donnie. Yep. But...
Does Mutagen provide formal wear? Because suddenly he has a tie.
It's the best part. He gets sprayed by this thing, and suddenly he has a shirt and tie on. Like, a part of the mutation is professional wear.
He did not have a shirt and tie when he mutated the first time, nor is he at any point when we've seen him on screen as Hamadayoshi at the Foot Dojo wearing formal wear or pants or anything like that.
Nope.
Or wait, no, he had, like, sparring pants on. But he's got, like, formal khakis on here.
It's a full suit.
So Splinter is eager to go topside for the first time in, well, I guess a week. And they get all emo about him.
Go take your human body for a test drive.
Could have phrased that better. But they're worried that he's going to abandon them for, and I quote, his own kind. And that's an important line.
Yeah.
Very important line.
There's this whole, this whole episode, the through line is like the concept of humanity and what the Turtles and Splinter, now Hamadayoshi again, like, think of themselves and who they are and where they belong.
No, exactly. Again, really great character development and legitimate concerns. Like, this honestly feels like one of the more adult episodes, which sounds weird to say out loud, just because they do consider all the different facets and angles and the caveats and obstacles and what could go wrong. And
there's an element of maturity here, and just like you get, I think this is probably the best sense thus far about the actual, like, familial bond and the love that they have for Splinter, because they do just say, like, you know what, he'll make his own decision and whatever decision he makes, we'll accept. It's like, wow, like, you're 14, 15 years old, and you're like, yeah, we just want our dad to be happy.
That's really nice. You don't see that. You know, most TV shows of this era depict, not even this era, really. They're kind of contemporary, too. Teens are just rebellious, right? They just hate their parents. But these guys, they love their dad. They love him so much.
Yeah.
It's nice. That's nice. April is at the library, cutting over to Midtown, and she's reporting on PSAs.
This is the best.
Well, this is also reference number two based on location. Hint, hint. Bebop and Rocksteady are also there, of course, and they're just kind of wandering around out back wearing sweatsuits.
Nothing over their faces or heads.
Nothing. No, but they have very nice, comfy-looking velour sweatsuits.
It's the best disguise they could come up with, which is still, like, kind of better than the Turtles.
This is so out of character for the show to have everybody have such crappy disguises. No one's going to sell toys based on this. Could you...
Wait, you don't want to buy the Shredder in a brown cloak action figure?
So yeah, skipping ahead, obviously Bebop and Rocksteady are there supporting the Shredder and his ventures. Shredder's in a hoodie in like a Friar Tuck kind of robe thing that he's been wearing throughout the series. It's like the Turtles set the benchmark for MCU grade disguises. They really did. It's like baseball cap, hoodie, sunglasses. No one's going to recognize me now. But also, could you imagine this? No one would want to buy these toys, but I want the parody ad. It was like, Playmates Toys presents Weekend Shredder, comes with stretchy pants, Pringles, and a half-used six-pack. That's what it feels like. It's like everybody's in their comfy wear.
You just need a bottle opener.
So when April spots Bebop and Rocksteady, she goes,
I can't believe it, and the Turtles won't either.
Yes, they will, and yes, you should.
Well, I mean, of all the places in New York to expect to see Bebop and Rocksteady, you think it'd be in a library?
All right, you got me there. Turtles are moping around at home still because their deadbeat dad went out for cigarettes and hasn't come back yet. More of that weird animation. Like, this is just sighting. It clearly it's rushed because you notice it about 4 minutes, 54 seconds. Raph's jaw just kind of like disconnects from his face.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That was weird.
Yeah. Again, I don't want to slam too hard on it, but this is definitely, like, for a well-written episode, a well-executed episode, well-paced episode, the fault line is definitely the animation here.
Yeah, it's the weak link for sure. Man, their feet look so puffy. It's weird.
Everybody's just chonky in this one. April calls the turtles, and I want to point out that the green turtle comms are back versus the silver that we cited in previous episodes. That kind of
I didn't see this, but I looked up the like wiki for this episode, and apparently in the turtle van you see the silver one for Donnie.
Oh, do you?
So yeah,
do they all have unique ones then? Because I only remember the green ones.
I don't think so. I think it's just a mistake.
Such a weird thing to obsess over, but yeah, like I was kind of excited, like, hey, the green turtle shell. So she calls the turtles. Bebop and Rocksteady are doing their best.
They bolted out of their house, weapons flailing in the air.
They're very excited to get out. I mean, Dad went out. They want to go out.
Yeah, this is what they needed. They needed a reason to get out of their funk.
I really just love that Bebop and Rocksteady, while they're running around in sweats, all I could think of is Saturday Night Live pumping up with Hans and Franz.
And we want to pump you up.
That is a good one. Yeah. Well, especially Rocksteady.
Yeah. Oh, while we're talking about the disguises, with Shredder and his robe, it's a burgundy color. I don't know if we've ever cited that out before, but for those watching along, it's like a dark burgundy. Do you think that's like a little bit of a wink to his original coloring in the Mirage comics? Even though he was black and like those comics were drawn black and white, there was character reference sheets about how to draw them. And furthermore, when they've been recolorized more contemporarily, he's wearing like a burgundy shirt. And like you see the toys, you got a burgundy shirt.
It might be for sure. I mean, I feel like even whereas this series didn't really follow what Eastman and Laird were writing in the comics, they were still involved. So it would make sense that like some of those details pop through at times.
I mean, it's also easy to just pick a rando color, but they could have picked a rando color, but instead he gets burgundy, which looks regal and evil, I guess. So does purple, though. I don't know. I'm probably overthinking that one, but it did catch my attention.
There's a line here that I really love, which is I feel like both Shredder speaking honestly to Bebop and Rocksteady, and then also a line by the writers for like anybody wondering about like what the details of his plans are, where he just says,
"If I told you, Cretans, your feeble brains would fail to comprehend it. So why bother?"
Shredder really piques his like sadomasochism in this one. He's just nasty to them for no reason. He just got him back on his team. You think he'd be excited. And no, he's such a dick. But I mean, in that sense, that's why this episode, I think, felt way more natural to me. Because, like, looking over Shredder's shoulder and seeing two anthropomorphic zoo animals leaning over is much more appropriate than the New Jersey scientist guy.
For sure.
This is the TMNT flavor I'm familiar with. And, like, Shredder's there researching how to make portals, and the dumbasses are literally just breathing down his neck.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we're going to make portals this week, if you were wondering.
Oh, my God. The whole premise is amazing. Just everything about this, like, setup.
It's like magic is science in this.
I want to follow up, like, his original line, because you were like, yeah, you're right. He is treating them like he's a complete dick. He's treating them awful. But Rocksteady's immediate response is, he's right. Like, he knows he's an idiot. It doesn't matter if he knows what he's doing. He's just going to follow along anyway.
I think I'm going to appreciate Bebop and Rocksteady a lot more in retrospect in this rewatch than I did when I was a kid, because I'm just like, they're so easy to beat. I could beat them. I'm 5 years old. I could beat the shit out of Bebop. He's a dumbass. But now I'm just like, oh, these guys are completely self-aware and just trying to make a paycheck. I can respect that.
But yes, let's spell out for our audience what the plan by Shredder is. He found a book in the public library that has a magic spell to open a portal to different dimensions.
That's the plan.
That's the plan.
That's the plan, and the best part is when Krang signs off on it later.
Oh my God, there's so much about that whole interaction. I can't wait till we get to it.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Meanwhile, Splinter is up street level having an absolute ball. People are making fun of his clothes. There's a non-medallion cab trying to snooker him for money. I was ready to pull a trigger on the LaGuardia moment here, but nope, that's actually the opposite going on. But for the sake of consistency, the turtles do hold true with the absolute worst ninjas ever, as Shredder can hear them coming down the hallway chattering. Guys.
They even scold each other on being loud in the library. What are you doing?
So Shredder hides behind the table for like 3 seconds and then pops out and attacks them.
I I love this line. I am not going to let us get past this without talking about it, because they walk in the door and Leo's like, Shredder's been here, I know it. And then Shredder bursts out from behind the table or whatever and goes,
wrong, you wretched reptile, I'm still here.
You can get excited about the line delivery all you want. I am way more excited about the fact that he has exploding ninja stars.
He just throws an explosive at them in the middle of the library.
It's a ninja, it's a blade. We've never established that he's got explosive projectiles or anything. He just throws a ninja star and then suddenly half the library explodes.
And he beats them immediately. Like, you could have just done this at any point in time. This is what, the 13th episode?
They're down, man. They're real down. Okay, so Bebop and Rocksteady are looming over their apparently dead carcasses.
Yeah, they've been ordered to defeat the turtles once and for all. But don't worry, because Leo wakes up just in time to throw his sword at a steam heater.
Fight time. What is on your Ninja Turtles bingo card for this fight?
having watched the episode, you want the answer, or what I was expecting?
What you were expecting.
I was expecting some, you know, classic shenanigans, maybe knocking down some of the book shelves.
Puns?
Yeah, puns. The steam heat was a good start, I'll give you.
20-second fight. Bebop and Rocksteady haul ass out of there after getting steam-bombed by Leo slicing a radiator. There's one pun, and then expeditious retreat. 20 seconds. Done.
Oh, yeah. They're like, oh, no, they're not dead. Bye.
Wouldn't you think that they'd want a rematch or something? Like, they're just cowards in this.
Yep.
Depends on the episode, because sometimes they're, like, eager for the fight, but this one they were not prepared for, probably because they were, you know, in their comfy clothes.
And it's so weird, too. Like, nobody looks good in this fight.
No.
Because Bebop and Rocksteady run away immediately, and then Mikey, Donnie, and Raph just faceplant into the door for no reason.
They full Three Stooge. Leo looks good in this fight. His reflexes slicing the radiator were solid. And effective.
That is true.
Upon their retreat, Donnie finds the documents that show a temple that is used by cultists, specifically back in the 1920s. This is reference number 3. Hint, hint, hint.
I love this so much. It is such a wild, such a wacky concept.
But this is setting up another essential trope for the Ninja Turtles, and that's the concept of forgotten underground civilizations.
Yep.
So I didn't realize, like, I don't remember that part of 87, and it's very subtle here, and I don't know if there's more in the series. We will find out. But that's the first one.
Well, we had a hint in it in, like, the very first episode.
How so? I don't recall.
When they're chasing after the Technodrome, they just pass through an abandoned town in the depths of Manhattan.
Oh, yeah. Those were those weird, like, adobo buildings kind of just, like, in the hill next to the drilled hole from the Technodrome. You're right.
Yeah. And they don't talk about it. They don't mention it. It's just there.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I totally forgot about that. But now they reference that, like, there were cultists operating in the sewer. So this counts. It's all relevant just because... Yeah, the whole underground civilization thing is pretty cool. It's happened here. It happened in 2K3 animated series, and it was an essential plot point in Rise of the Ninja Turtles.
And when someone says subway terminal to you, what do you think of?
Turnstiles.
Okay, yeah. Now it's a
holiday! Sorry.
I mean, I was thinking like, okay, subway station. Hold that thought, everybody. We're going to come back to that point.
We will. So Shredder wants to go back to Dimension X, apparently. But really, I think he just wants to open the portal so he can get his resources back from his withholding wife, Krang.
Yep, that's what he wants. He wants to open a portal so that he get his army, which he always just talks about his army, which I guess is the footbots.
But Krang built those.
Well, I don't know. That's what he wants.
Well, my takeaway is that Shredder, this show is really just about Shredder fighting Krang. Because if those two could stop bickering... They would have conquered the world a week ago.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, like, it seems like his whole thing is, I'm going to go behind Krang's back. I'm going to find my own way to Dimension X so that I could get my army without him, like, me having to deal with him.
But the turtles don't need to be involved at all.
No, the turtles don't need to be involved.
Do you think if Shredder did get his resources, he would just, like, throw Krang straight under the bus?
Oh, my God, yes, absolutely.
I thought so.
This is a marriage of convenience.
That's the best descriptor I've heard for this pair of villains. That's so good. You're right. Like, they might as well just have, like, a shotgun wedding or something.
Yeah, they don't like each other. They don't care about each other at all. They don't, like, Krangs doesn't even give a shit. He's just like, I want to conquer this world. Just, you know, do something, you loser.
If they weren't so dysfunctional, they could rule the galaxy.
And yeah, if they literally just did anything together. Like, Shredder's whole thing is, I need to get my army from Dimension X. And Krang is like,
no.
I want to take over Earth. I have this army, but they never meet in the middle.
I think Krang's just happy to be home. Right? Because that was his whole thing. It's like, they took my body, Dimension X. So now he's chilling. And we see it exemplified in this episode.
Oh, it is beautiful. I hope every episode has a scene like this moving forward.
We're leaving so much up in the air. Let's move forward linearly. In the next scene, Splinter slash Yoshi is now wandering around Central Park. He gets jumped by muggers who are going to kill him.
In broad daylight. They say to him, you shouldn't have come to the park alone. It is broad daylight. The way the executives of this show think about New York City is hilarious.
I think that one just came down to, like, an animation restriction. They didn't want to draw night.
It's just like, don't go into a park alone. Any park at any time of day.
Or you will die.
Or you will get mugged and murdered.
But that plan fails because Splinter starts to mutate back within, like, 10 minutes of leaving home.
Yeah. Yeah, a really short amount of time.
So Donnie did a real crap job. This is our anti going to LaGuardia moment because everybody reacts appropriately for once. Crowd starts panicking, chasing Splinter the Ratman, half Ratman.
The muggers get scared off right away, and Splinter's like, oh no, I see my reflection in the water and I'm turning back into a rat. It's time to get out of here. I gotta get back to the sewer, and then we cut away.
We cut away to Shredder taking out his anger issues and lack of patience on Bebop and Rocksteady again. Man, I'm about ready to call HR on this guy. This is getting rough.
Well, the other guy in charge tried to murder somebody by disintegrating them.
True.
So I don't think the HR department's getting much done.
but Shredder does the thing he always does, and he calls Krang to pre-gloat about this thing that Krang did not ask him to do. And I love how dismissive Krang is in this conversation. He rolls his eyes when Shredder's like, I am going to use magic to open a portal. And he rolls his eyes.
Oh, really?
It's just, again, like, we kind of talked about this before, but, like, why does Shredder call up Krang? He's going behind his back, but before he does it, he's like, hey, I just wanted to let you know that, fuck you, I'm getting my army back without you.
Shredder is so desperate for affirmation and, like, support, he just can't function without somebody telling him he's a good boy.
It's okay, though, because Krang knows exactly what spell he's talking about. He is fully aware of this option.
Of course.
He is not surprised by it.
No, but he does have some sage advice about being careful to not pronounce it wrong. Or you can open a dimension that is worse than this one. So dimension Y.
Yeah, there's only two other dimensions.
Cut back to Splinter. He is running around, trying to get back underground, hiding from the populace. But a truck blocks a manhole cover that he's aiming at. All the people that have been exposed to bipedal terrapins, kaiju robots, and flying cars suddenly panic at the sight of this guy who slightly resembles a rat, like he's got kind of ears and a nose and a tail going on, but not much.
Yeah. So a couple things here. I just want to say to our four heroes, I'm sorry. All this time we've been calling you out for being terrible ninjas, when in reality, it's just because your father is also a terrible ninja.
They buckle under pressure.
Like, you had a full scope of this. You're hiding over, you're peeking over the wall, Yoshi, and you're keeping an eye on the street and where the manhole cover was, and you just bolt in the middle of the street in broad daylight. You almost get hit by a truck that you almost certainly would have heard, if not seen, from your point of view. And then you get stuck with a crowd of people who are like, we're not scared, we're angry, and we're coming after you.
I think he's clearly in Union Square. Also, it's very disorienting having the Turtles call him Master Yoshi in this episode, right?
So I actually want to make a comment about that, because we haven't been good about this in this episode thus far, but the turtles were excellent on, like, when he's in rat form, he's Splinter. When he's human, he's Yoshi. Like, they called him, like, Master Yoshi from the point that he became human again. And I was like, God damn, man. There are people who today can't figure out pronouns, but this show in 1988 can handle, like, someone's new name just like that. No problem at all. So if you got a fucking problem, fuck you. The turtles are know where it's at.
Yeah, 100% fuck you. This shouldn't be that hard. It makes sense, right? Like, he'd want to be re-identified with his original sense, even though he's still the same person, but he's just like, I want to distance myself from this form of me that I am not happy with.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not even a thing that he's not happy about. It's just that, like, his...
He'd not preferred.
Right. His life completely changed when this thing happened to him, and it's deep inside, this is not how he perceives himself.
It is interesting, though, how you cite that is kind of a mirror to modern society and pronouns and identity and gender identity and things like that. It is interesting.
I just love how, like, it's no one even, like, he doesn't ask them.
No.
You know, Splinter isn't like, call me Hamato Yoshi now. They just start being like, well, yeah, this is who he is. This is, like, we're going to call him by his name.
Don't they even correct themselves at one point?
They do, yeah. They say he's not Splinter anymore.
Yeah. I mean, Splinter is a fun nickname, but it is just that, a nickname.
Yeah.
It's out of it's a move of respect is what it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. But they are still very sad and worried that he may not come home.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it doesn't change how they feel about the situation and that, like, they're worried that, you know, like, he doesn't have to live in the sewer with them anymore. So why would he come back? Like, that's a perfectly natural question for them to have, to be like, you know, like, we don't want to be down here if we had the choice. Now he has the choice. Why would he come back?
It really is great commentary on respecting people and their decisions and their spaces. And yeah, we could all learn a few things from this interaction.
It's like there are so many things about this episode. And when we get to the conclusion, it's wild the kind of conversation that this particular episode is having, considering it's a Saturday morning kids cartoon.
Before, this was really a conversation that was at the forefront of a lot of people's minds. Also, to add that.
Yeah, with some of the things. I mean, there's other things when we get to, like, what the episode is all about that, you know, obviously the conversation's been happening for a very long time. It's just interesting to get that conversation from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
There's definitely valuable commentary that comes from every form of the Turtles about respecting people who are different than you, period.
For sure.
Cutting over to Channel 6, Irma is grilling April if she's ever met the Turtles, and I had to backpedal for a second because I thought that they met at the Killer Pizzas episode, but then I went back and rewatched and I realized, like, no, Irma faints and never sees the Turtles in that episode, regardless of the fact that they converge on the same villains. So, consistency, points. Turtles are calling April, naturally, while she's at work. She's not thrilled by this. But they also cite a documentary that she shot about subway tunnels, which, interesting, relevant, realistic, believable.
And they pay attention to what she does.
Yeah, they do.
They're really good friends.
Slow news day, April.
Well, she was doing PSAs at the library. It must be really slow.
Irma eavesdrops, and the Turtles use the phrase, toot sweet.
We need a videotape of it. Toot sweet.
I really don't have any commentary on that, but they say those words.
Yep. It happened.
And then they ask her to come meet them at the Cornelius building to help stop Shredder. I looked it up. There is a real-life Cornelius Chapel on Governor's Island, and then there is a Cornelius Vanderbilt statue in Midtown. But no formal Cornelius building in New York City. There is one in Buffalo.
That might have actually been, like, a reference to Vanderbilt or some, you know, like, without wanting to use the name.
Probably. I mean, Cornelius also just kind of sounds like something that somebody would have, like, a name of a person who would have built a skyscraper in New York City in the turn of the century.
That's true.
Leo is reading the spell on the phone while driving. Very unsafe. Points off the license.
Well, they weren't at the... Oh, you just meant that he's reading it.
He's reading the spell while they're driving the turtle van on their way to find Shredder. Eyes are not on the road, even a little bit.
Yeah, they're not in danger of opening a portal at this point, folks, because that's deep in the subway tunnels. He's just reading and driving.
Yeah, he's looking for details to understand what they're up against. But luckily, there's, as always, no other cars on the road. So they all meet up. April wants an explanation, and this might be the dumbest or most brilliant moment in writing history for this series. Donnie says,
"It's kind of complicated. Michelangelo, you explain it while Raphael and I check out this tape."
And we all know that this is going to go poorly. And I had my expectations set, and I anticipated something, but it is not what we got. What does Michelangelo say here?
It's actually a really funny joke, because Mikey's thinking about it, and he's fumbling his words, and he starts to say one thing, and then he's like, "No, that's not a good way." He fumbles again, like, "Oh, man, that's not a good way." And then he comes back with,
"Well, if we don't find a certain subway terminal, the world's going to end at midnight. No biggie."
Because they know that Shredder is utterly incompetent.
I didn't even think about it that way. You know, like,
well, the world doesn't end if he calls an army in to rule it, right?
Fair.
It ends if he fucks up and sends the wrong portal through.
It still would be bad if he took over the world.
It would be bad, but it wouldn't end the world.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good point. They definitely have... they're like, there's no way he's going to succeed in what he wants to do, but he's going to do something bad.
So Shredder and Bebop and Rocksteady, they're searching the subway tunnels, walking down the train tracks. Reference 4. Hint, 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 hint. I love Bebop's line about the Ninja Turtles living in substandard housing here.
"Yeah, I don't know how the turtles can live in such substandard housing."
Yep. And then Shredder remembering that they live in the sewer because he somehow forgot, even though he has their fucking address.
He forgot. He says it out loud that he forgot they live in the sewers. That is why the series has lasted so long, because Shredder has terrible short-term memory.
It's okay, though, because we get the best scene in the show thus far.
All right. Shredder calls Krang on the communicator, and they show that Krang has just gotten out of the shower, wearing a full towel, wrapped around his waist, dripping. He's got a soap on a rope around his neck, and he's got a shower cap on his bald antenna head. And the visual gags are so good in this episode. And it all over-exemplifies that Shredder's just a needy boyfriend, because that's the kind of joke that you get when somebody just calls too often. Like, in a sitcom, it's like, "What do you want now?"
"You'll have to speak up. I'm wearing a towel."
He really is, though. He's just a needy boyfriend. Krang is, like, this close to just sending in the voicemail.
I have in all caps in my notes, "Krang takes a shower in his body, his robot body. His body wears a shower cap. His body that has no hair."
But his brain body wouldn't get wet.
"He has a towel wrapped around the robot's waist. The robot that permanently wears underwear."
Let's just call out and say, like, he took an oil bath or something like that. Like C-3PO in A New Hope.
No, he's visibly dripping in water, though.
I mean, it could just be unsoiled oil. We can't see how viscous it is.
Oh, my God. It's just like, it's such a... Whoever thought of this...
It's brilliant.
It's brilliant.
The gags in this are really, really good. Cannot emphasize enough. But Shredder's calling to ask for a neuro scrambler so he can mess with the turtle's head. Krang sends it over.
That he invented. He calls out that he invented this thing, which I think is probably, I don't know, we get callbacks every once in a while to Shredder being an inventor in this, and I like pointing it out.
It is kind of fun to me, like a different perspective and respect for this version of Shredder, where he's incompetent, he's a bumbling fool, he's grandiose, but... he is the scientist in all of the different versions of the Shredder that we've had so far. He's arguably, and I take this with a grain of salt, the smartest.
He has intelligence, but not wisdom.
But anyways, Krang sends the device so that Shredder can scramble the turtle's head so that they'll fight each other. That's.
And this gets me to one more nitpicky detail.
Uh-oh.
When did he make this?
You mean in the timeline? I mean, does he say it's specifically calibrated for turtles or reptiles or anything, or is it just like...
Oh, no. He says that it will specifically scramble the brainwaves of mutants. Because Rocksteady and Bebop are like, what about us?
That's a really good point, because they essentially started the mutant wave and then immediately got their asses kicked back to Dimension X. So, yeah.
And then he came back over. So, like, he must have made it in that short period of time that they were trapped in Dimension X.
Was he just planning on, like, setting up a gladiator brawl with all of his bruisers that he mutated in the Technodrome.
Right.
That's an interesting observation. Like, that is a nitpick to the next level, but you have a point.
Because it's so specifically about mutants that he either did it, like, right away, just like, well, I made these mutants, I might as well fuck around with them. Or he did it in the short period of time that they got sent to Dimension X, but he couldn't bring it back with him.
And it's just been sitting in a closet with Krang. Also, like, Bebop and Rocksteady are afraid that, like, is it going to affect us too? And no one addresses it. And then it never actually occurs. I would have loved to see that cutaway where Bebop and Rocksteady just start, like, wrestling. So anyways, he's got the Neuro Scrambler cutting up to Splinter. The cops are chasing him now. He's found his way down into a subway station. And this is the most realistic depiction yet, just having the cops chase him relentlessly.
Yep.
Rob Paulsen and Cam Clark obviously play the cops in this.
Yep.
Hey, whatever that thing is, it looks dangerous.
Oh, man. There's a really nice, like, trope subversion almost in the next time we see these cops.
Oh, and how that we're a scene ahead of ourselves at this point, but Splinter hides behind an oncoming train and the cops give up and walk away. And then he finishes his demutation back into the rat and has like 3 seconds to self-reflect. And then the cops are like, there he is.
Yeah, they're like, wait a second, I thought I heard something. Like, yeah, because they just left and you were like talking to yourself out loud in the middle of an abandoned subway station. They were probably only like 5 feet away.
Really is, like you said, setting the standard for the worst ninjas ever. So the Neuro Scrambler gets activated and it makes the turtles start to get dizzy and then angry and then they start brawling with each other. I thought it was just going to make them like hallucinate and think like, oh, Raphael looks like the Shredder, attack. But no, they're just mad. They're just irritated because it makes an annoying sound.
Yep. They just all become Raph. I got it. Brian, I need you to do me a favor.
Yeah.
We need to clip the shot of April pondering. And I want that to be like some recurring thing, or like I'll change our Twitter bio to that picture or something, because when that happened, it's like it's a 2 second thing. Mikey and I think it's Raph have a moment where they're like, ah, my head is killing me. And then it just cuts to April, who picks up her hand and puts it on her chin because she's deep in thought about like, what does that mean? But she says nothing. She's got this like plain face on. And it's just like 2 seconds. It's just long enough that it made me laugh hysterically.
That'll be our first reaction gif. I'll post it in Discord. All right, so the turtles are facing off in a major rumble, as Mikey says, and all I can think of is, turtles, come out to play!
Oh, yeah, yeah. April's eyes bug out. It was like, what are you doing? And then they just have, like, a weird Mexican standoff, like West Side Story meets Ninja Turtles without singing.
If they started snapping, I would have lost my shit. Also, angrily fighting against your own squad, reference number 5. Hint, 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 hint.
Ah.
So April's having a meltdown. Raph does the first shell head tuck, I think. Have we seen that yet?
Yeah. Yeah, we have.
We did. Oh, my bad.
I think Mikey did it in an episode when they were like, it was Shredder in the warehouse when he went in by himself.
You're right. You're right. Good catch. But I still like to see it. Love to see it.
God, I love being a turtle!
Yeah, and Mikey's nunchucks are still magic. He just disarms one of Leo's swords immediately.
That's what nunchucks are for.
I know, but, like, they seemed longer, and I don't know. There was something weird about the animation of it.
The chain length on Mikey's nunchucks are debatable. April finds a Neuro Scrambler, which is just making an annoying sound.
Guys, guys!
Which is... It's proven to only have bought Shredder like 30 seconds of lead time.
Yep.
She tosses it up in the air and the turtles smash it. But I like the little touch that they also shield her with their shells with the falling debris from over their heads. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah. And also, like, the thing that breaks them out first, again, tying into the theme of this episode, is that April calls out, like, what would Splinter think of you fighting each other? And it makes them think about their dad and, like, what it means to them. And it snaps them out of the effect for long enough to destroy the thing.
And they say it's almost as if Master Splinter was here teaching us still.
Yep.
Yeah. Important part. I really do love all of the family element building in this one. But also, Splinter's only been gone like 8 hours, and as soon as they knock the wacky out of their heads, they get right back on this depression kick of like, he's never coming back home.
Yep.
They're sad puppies, man. They talk about him like he's dead. They just assume that he wants nothing to do with them, even though he raised them for 15 years.
There's a lot of self-loathing there.
Shredder and company find the temple underground and immediately do the smart thing and put Bebop and Rocksteady into sniper positions.
So every once in a while, he's got a good plan.
Yeah, because it pans out, because as soon as those dumbass turtles walk into the floor, like, unannounced, they nuke them. They fuck them up hard, including April, and they all drop like a sack of potatoes.
It's why, I mean, like, dude, just, like, do that every time.
Yeah.
Throw your exploding ninja star and stun them or whatever. I don't know.
Shredder has way more mini victories in this one than any other episode.
Yeah, he's dangerous again.
Yeah. So Shredder's close to victory at this point. I love this camera angle that's up from like under his chin looking up towards the ceiling. It looked like it was going to be a setup because there's this circular window above Shredder's head.
Yeah.
That you would think like maybe that's where Splinter's going to sneak in, because previously, like while he's down in the sewer, he says he smells incense.
Yep.
And he uses his nose to find out what that is. He's not necessarily tracking the turtles or trying to help his boys. He's just like, I smell something, I'm gonna go this way. So rat skills on par. Either way, he does get the drop on Shredder, but it's just from the tunnels, so that overhead window is not as relevant, except that that's how the portal opens. But if you look close,
yep,
about 17 minutes and 50 seconds in, tell me I'm wrong here, that was supposed to be a pentagram design, right?
Oh, 100%.
And somebody at the network vetoed it.
Yeah, though they were like, no way.
I mean, as a cultist,
that's not being shown in America.
Cultists underground, calling on evil or whatever the hell you want to justify for it. With the line crossing panes up there were clearly supposed to be a pentagram star in the beginning.
I also want to pay off the comment that I made before about, like, they say it's an old abandoned subway terminal. And I get that it's abandoned. I'm not like, you know, I'm not going to be like, whoa, they should have gotten hit by a train or something like that. But whoever these cultists of the 1920s were built their temple at the crossroads of a four-way subway. like it's literally a subway crossroads.
I don't see what's wrong with that.
It's a T intersection that they built a temple on. How long ago was this part of the subway defunct? Like, why'd you build it here?
Look, have you ever seen Poltergeist? People build bad shit over top of things that they shouldn't have all time.
Yeah, and actually, they do explain why it's built specifically there. It's because of, like, a thinning of the dimensions or something, Donnie explained. So don't hit me up in the comments on that.
Location of contrivance.
Just, like, the animation style, like, how they decided to draw it, I thought was hilarious. Because you expect it to be, like, at a subway station, not, like, just at an intersection. It'd be like walking into your main, like the main intersection of your town, and a whole bunch of people being like, yep, this is where Cthulhu's coming.
I mean, I don't have any better ideas. Shredder starts reciting the portal cantrip, and he says, portal now, open wide, reveal at last what is inside. That's not how portals work. There's nothing inside the portal, it's a door. Also, Krang is worried that he was going to fuck that up. Oh, wait, he does.
Yep.
Because Splinter shows up at the absolute 11th hour, and when he's in the middle of open now the door to dimension.
Stop!
Dimension stop. And apparently dimension stop is just the hentai dimension.
Yeah, out comes a weird Lovecraftian chicken nugget with a beak and tentacles.
That's a much better description than I had. Yeah, it's like a brain thing with, like, tentacles and the cyclops eye and a beak. But it's actually legitimately threatening and scary.
Yeah, yeah, it regenerates. They can't, like, they cut its tentacles and they grow right back.
Yeah, yeah,
some
yeah.
Awesome scream work from April's voice actress.
Yes. So, yeah, everybody starts getting grabbed by this tentacle octopusy dimensional thing. Shredder actually rescues Bebop and Rocksteady, and I could totally have left him behind. I kind of thought he was going to. But it's so he can, and I quote, think of a suitable punishment for them later.
See, he cares.
That's convenient.
A suitable punishment wasn't being eaten by an extra-dimensional being.
That's textbook sadomasochism. Like, you can't hurt yourself. I'm in charge of that.
Yeah, well, one more thing, too, about Shredder. He karate chops himself free of the tentacle.
Oh, and he uses the back of his palm?
Dude is covered in blades.
He only uses those blades when it's completely inappropriate. We've established this. But the way they beat this thing, after Shredder, Bebop, and Rocksteady have hauled ass out of there, the turtles trick it into super shredding itself.
Yep.
And they just knocks down the columns, and the crossroads station collapses on itself. Bob's your uncle.
It just dies off screen.
Yeah.
The turtles drop April off at the station. At, like, Channel 6. And Irma is there waiting for her. And for the first time in this, like, this episode is the first time, because she wasn't before either, but she follows through now. Irma isn't thirsty for men. She's thirsty for adventure.
Oh, you reporters get all the fun, or whatever the hell she says. So I wanted to take a few steps back. With Splinter citing the incense thing, was that something I missed? Like, he finds his boys because he smells incense. What incense?
I assumed it was something that Shredder was burning at the temple.
But they never never show it or reference it. I guess, I mean, we are just assuming that all religious cultist temples have candles burning or something?
I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
No, they definitely didn't show it, so that was kind of like a okay, I guess, moment.
I mean, unless, hold on, there are torches lit at the temple, so maybe the torches were incense? I don't know. It's the only open flame.
It's better than nothing. Like, they gave him a reason, like, I smell something, but yeah, I don't recall any specific incense.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Splinter is not mad that he's a rat again. He says, people kind of suck anyways. But if he hadn't showed up, Shredder would have won. And I hate to be this guy, but Splinter caused the problem.
I mean, like, wait, explain.
Because Splinter showed up and stopped Shredder from opening the portal, only to open the portal to something more evil.
Okay, that's true.
Like Krang said.
Now we know Dimension What or Dimension Stop is the Cthulhu realm, but the Lovecraftian realm. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. If Splinter wasn't there, then Shredder would have succeeded and opened to Dimension X, which was probably fine.
I mean, it's debatably bad, but it's the kind of thing where it's like, okay, well, at least now we know what we're dealing with and we can anticipate for it, as opposed to giant tentacle monster we have no idea what's going on and can regenerate and is apparently invincible, except for ceilings. And then Mikey's just happy that he's a rat again, because that leaves more pizza for us. So human Yoshi likes pizza.
Exactly. All humans like pizza.
It's true.
They were afraid that with Splinter becoming Yoshi again, that he would eat all the pizza. They would have to share the pizza with him. But now that he's a rat again, rats don't eat pizza.
That's why Mikey was crying in the beginning of the episode. This was an emotionally charged episode, more than I expected. Decent plot points.
It was.
Good character development. And a lot crammed into 20 minutes. Like, overall, very, very good. I went in with low expectations, like I mentioned. I knew that it was going to be about the Yoshi demutation subplot kind of thing, but I really didn't think it was going to be this impactful and important to, like, the overall mythos and arc. But it came together really nice. Great psych gags, great legitimate laugh out loud moments for me.
Yeah, for sure. Same. I mean, like, I was surprised at how, for lack of a better term, like, serious the episode was in parts. But maybe not even serious, maybe just mature. There was a lot of mature concepts in this. And I think, like, the last thing that Splinter says is really the cherry on top of that maturity, because he says, having seen the hatred of humans firsthand, he's happy being an animal. Like, he says that about himself. He's like, I'm happy to be an animal because the humans are worse.
He's not wrong.
And so, like, they've completely disassociated, well, at least him, because the turtles were always turtles, but, like, Splinter is disassociated with humanity.
And rightly so. If I was in his position, I would do the same thing.
It's so wild. Like, I was writing down, it has kind of like a sad ending with that that phrase, like that conclusion. But, and I know that, like, the TMNT property as a whole has always faced bigotry head on. But I thought it was really different. I'm just going to read what I wrote here because I'm getting a little bit confused. But, like, whereas different series have chose to focus on the good people who become a found family to the turtles and Splinter, it's a little surprising to see this kid show come to the conclusion that actually people are kind of shitty.
I, I, I think that's one of the most profound things that this series has said so far. And I would love if they if they're able to explore that a little more in future episodes.
Yeah, I really am interested to see how this develops moving forward. Like, do they kind of transform it into this, you know what, we're going to focus on the people who are closest to us because we can't control what other people do. I was just still really surprised to see, like, you know, them focusing less on, like, being a better person and more on, like, there's only so much you can do about other people.
I mean, you really said it best. It's a surprisingly mature episode. It's introspective.
Yeah.
And on that note, I would definitely give this one, I'm hovering between excellent to cowabunga, because it's not the greatest episode to ever exist. It doesn't slam anything that important in our faces that we're like, oh yeah, that's essential turtledom, but it is a smart episode. I think
if we had like a category between the two, I think that's where it would land for me, because there are like a lot of weird animation hiccups in this episode. Nothing that like really takes away from what's happening, but it's just weird at times.
It is weird, but at the same time, it still leagues above a lot of the other animation that was happening in the late 80s. So,
oh yeah, that's true.
I think I'm leaning towards a cowabunga again on this one.
I think like it definitely continues the trend from last episode. Like the baton pass is solid, so I think we can safely put it at the cowabunga. Yeah, it's a great episode. Like, go watch this episode. It's really good.
Top tier. Very thoughtful episode. And our moral. So what do we take away from this one? In 2022, we're looking back at 1988 and this show about anthropomorphic turtles and their love for their father. What is our overall message?
I mean, like, as a whole, like, I think it's hard not to see where the episode ends and not walk away with it by thinking, like, take care of the people closest to you and, you know, express how you feel. I mean, definitely express how you feel about the people that are closest to you, but with the knowledge that there's only so much you could do about the other people out there.
Well said. I just want to tack onto that an additional: be true to yourself.
Yeah.
Recognize your role in your own squad, in your own posse, and take solace and take value in that.
I think what impresses me the most about this episode is that I think so far it is the strongest characterization of each of the main players in the series.
Except maybe April.
Well, she's not doing, like,
she doesn't really lend much.
Yeah, I mean, she is just kind of, well, I mean, I don't know, because she does, like, she does the research for them. She, like, meets up with the team to relay, like, where the train station is and helping them find it. So there is that element there. Like, she's not just a damsel in distress. There have been far worse episodes for April than this one.
That's true. She doesn't damsel at all. Her research is essential plot points to progressing her pre-existing research.
And she also grounds the turtles and reminds them about, like, who they are and who they're trying to be. Like, she's the one that gets them out of that mind, like, neural whatever, by being like, what would your father think? Like, you know, it's a simple thing. But she doesn't even know. Like, they don't even really tell her that Splinter is human again. She never sees him as human. And yet she still has enough of, like, a bead on what's going on and how they're feeling to be like, hey, listen, like, think about your family, and that helps bring them back from the brink.
Good point. I take back what I said. April's existence is important, even if she does not immediately cause any major pivots or essential plot points. All right, good point. So before we let everyone go, I hope you caught the references. For anyone curious out there, I'm citing Ghostbusters. There's more than a few moments in this episode that reminded me of major points in the Ghostbuster films, from wandering around in the sewers on the train tracks right before, like, Ray and Egon and Winston get assaulted by the heads on sticks in Ghostbusters 2. There's... I don't think they were coincidences, because they came kind of rapid fire, and I picked up on that pretty early, and I thought that was pretty cute.
I also wanted, like, this is one of those I'm not really sure if this is connected at all, and I'll be totally honest that I didn't look it up, but I'm pretty sure it comes before. The episode being titled Splinter No More is just very close to Spider-Man No More, and it's funny because they have nothing in common with each other, you know?
Except they're comics.
Well, I mean, besides, like, the generic, like, yes, obviously they're both comics, but I mean, like, the plots of the story, like, you know, Spider-Man... Peter Parker gave up being Spider-Man because he was tired of people, like, making fun of him in the press and, like, accusing him of not being a hero and stuff. And Splinter was just like, no, I just want to be human again.
That's true. But it's also just clear and makes me appreciate that there's definitely some other comic book fans on the writing staff.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
All right. Before we shut it down, we're going to leave you with our weekly affirmation pizzamation. Mother Teresa once said, if you judge pizza, you'll have no time to eat it.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Coming up next week.
Man, what a far out place.
You were right, guys. Dig that crazy cyclotron.
How groovy that you knew about this sewer line, Michelangelo.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, groovy like a movie.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you on the next episode of Deuteronomy.
Bye. Deuteronomy is produced by Brian Van Gelder and me, Dan Spitaleri. Brian edits and mixes the show and also designed our show art. Our theme music is composed by Mario Cello Nunez. You can hear more of his music on Spotify, which we've linked to in the show notes. Find us on Twitter at Deuteronomy_TMNT and send email to deuteronomy.tmnt@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Cowabunga!
Cowabunga!